Dr. Dockery, faculty, students, guests, and especially members of the class of 1955. What a pleasure, what a joy for me to participate today with you in Founders Day and for me to be back on this campus. My mother went to Union. This was her university. And in a way that I'm not sure that Dr. Dockery knows, this too is one of my universities. In the summer of 1958, very early that summer, it became apparent to me that I was going to be asked to repeat freshman chemistry at the Virginia Military Institute. And I needed a course to take to get out of the way so I could take chemistry again. And so I came to the old campus of Union in a classroom down in a quiet basement, and we met early in the morning for 4 weeks, and I got American history out of the way. And that seems strange to me because history is something I've been coming back to ever since. But in that strange way, I enjoy today to come back and be a part of Union University. 3 years ago, Jimmy Davis, the Founders Day address, talked about Union's science heritage. 2 years ago, Fisher Humphreys talked about Union's Baptist heritage. I think it appropriate today that I talk about Union's historic heritage. In a way, for the last 3 months, Union has been much on my mind. In November of this year, I published my second book, Old Trails and Tales of Tennessee. And one of the stories in that book is about the Reverend Billy Graham. When I published my first book, I had concentrated on important people who had come across the stage in Jackson. And the first time that I made a book review, a lady interrupted me suddenly and said, "Why didn't you write about Billy Graham?" And I responded back, "Because I didn't know that he was here." And everybody seemed to know that Billy Graham had been here except the county historian. So it occurred to me if I would write a second book someday that I might write a story about Billy Graham. And I asked people, when was he here? And I got vague answers, sometime after the Second World War. Well, that's a half of a century for me to find him. And I had trouble with that. And so it occurred to me one day, I would just ask him when he was in Jackson. And my secretary was a Baptist, and when I said, "Regina, let's email Billy Graham," I'll never forget how big her eyes got, but we did, and he responded back in less than 10 minutes through his administrative assistant and thanked me for my request and told me that I might be assured that he had never been in Jackson, Tennessee before. And so I moved on to other stories, but that thought haunted me. I wondered who those people thought they saw that June afternoon. And then it occurred to me that perhaps he had come here when he had been nearby doing a crusade somewhere else. And so we emailed him again and asked if he had ever been in Memphis. And the response came back in less than 10 minutes that he had been in Memphis in the summer of 1951. And then it was easy. I went to the library with a microfilm, and in 15 minutes' time, there was Harold Key's picture of Billy Graham on the front page of the Jackson Sun at Old Rothrock Stadium. And he had come because of you. He had come here at the request of the president of Union University. And it was a wonderful afternoon. People didn't have much time to find out that Billy Graham was indeed coming here, less than 24 hours. But they filled Rothrock up, and there was standing room only, and a lot of people came forward to witness that day. And he had a young singer named George Beverly Shea who sang. Billy Graham was 32 years old when he came here. Oddly enough, his doctor said that if he continued at the same pace that he was doing then, that he would not live longer than 5 years. Think about that. Think how many lives he has touched in that period of time, and he continues still. And I thank Union for bringing him here to this stage. The obvious question is, did I ever tell Billy Graham that he had indeed been to Jackson, Tennessee? And I did email him with that information, and that was more than 2 years ago, and I have not heard from him since. My mother used to say that you can tell a man by the company he keeps. If that be true of an institution, then Union University is a wonderful institution because of the historic people that have been associated with you through the years. Whether we talk about the predecessors, the Jackson Male Academy, West Tennessee College, the Southwestern Baptist University, or Union University, they're all part of your history. They're all the same. Let's look back for a minute at some of my favorite characters. The first was a doctor from Carlisle, Pennsylvania, Dr. William E. Butler. He graduated from the University of Pennsylvania. He had to come down four rivers to get to Jackson, Tennessee. He was the Surgeon General for the Army at the Battle of New Orleans, fought with Andrew Jackson in two wars against the Indians. He was a charter member of the Presbyterian Church. 6 years later, he changed and became a charter member of the Episcopal Church. In a very colorful campaign, he ran an unsuccessful race against Davy Crockett. He was a doctor, a philanthropist, a soldier, and a farmer. Today, Dr. William E. Butler is referred to as the father of Jackson. Robert Cartmell was a graduate of West Tennessee College. He went on to get his law degree at Lebanon College, and he was an attorney and a farmer. But frail health kept him out of the Civil War. What we remember Robert Cartmell most for is that for 65 years, every day of 65 years, he wrote in his diary. And those diaries are called the Cartmell Diaries, and they are our best record of life in Civil War Jackson. Milton Brown is one of my very favorite people. He loved education. He was one of the first trustees of the Jackson Male Academy. But he also donated money for MCFI, the predecessor for Lambeth, to help them build a wing on a building. He helped to organize the CME Church and Lane College. And then he moved on and helped to found Vanderbilt University and served as a trustee on Vanderbilt's board until his death. He was a United States congressman, and Milton Brown was the congressman whose vote brought Texas into the United States. He was the first president of the GM&O Railroad. And through his influence, the railroads came to West Tennessee, a move that would one day bring industry into Jackson. William H. Jackson, known as Billy or Red Jackson, only went to Union for 1 year, and then he received an appointment to West Point. He graduated from West Point, went into the Army, became a Confederate general and rode under Nathan Bedford Forrest. He married a lady named Celine Harding, who was the daughter of General William E. Harding, who owned Bellmead Plantation. And after the war, Billy Jackson moved on to Bellmead and helped that become one of the grandest plantations in all of the South. His brother, Howell Jackson, graduated from West Tennessee College. He did not go into the Army, but he was a member of the state legislature, the United States Senate, and President Benjamin Harrison appointed him as a justice of the United States Supreme Court. He's the only person from Jackson to ever serve in that capacity. By an odd quirk of fate, when his wife died, he later remarried, and he married another daughter of General Harding and also participated in the bringing to the state that it became Bellmead. Alexander W. Campbell was both an alumnus and a trustee. He was mayor of the city of Jackson. He was a bank president. Funny how I always come back to bankers in these things. And he too became a Confederate general. He was a director of the M&O Railroad, one of Jackson's staunchest citizens. You would know him by the name that you see on one of our parks, Kate Campbell Robertson Park, and that is the Campbell of that family. William H. Stevens was a trustee of West Tennessee College. He was a fiery attorney involved in national politics. He too was a banker, president of the Union Bank. He was a clerk of the Supreme Court of Tennessee. He became colonel of the 6th Tennessee Infantry and led the soldiers from Jackson in to the fight at the Hornet's Nest at Shiloh when he was shot from his horse and wounded there. Those are mainly soldiers and bankers except for Cartmell. But there are two individuals who are more obscure that are really my favorite. The first is a man named Sam Lancaster. He was from Magnolia, Mississippi. He was born there in 1864. His family moved to Jackson, and he attended Southwest Baptist University, old SWBU. But his father went broke in one of the financial panics after the Civil War, and he had to drop out of school. But he continued his engineering studies. He went to work for the IC Railroad, and he was down in the Mississippi Delta working, and he was bitten by a mosquito and contracted malaria. He continued to work in a weakened condition, and that probably led to the onset of something much worse when he came down with polio. He was totally paralyzed. The only thing that he could move was his head, and he was in bed in that condition for 18 months. Doctors suspected that he would never move any part of his body again. And they conducted an experiment. They stuck needles under his fingernails to see if there was still feeling there left, and it was. He determined that if he could move one part of his body, that he could begin the road to recovery. And so he set out to move one finger, the middle finger on his left hand, and he worked and he worked at that until he could move that finger. And he could take that finger and grasp a pencil and put it in his mouth. And thus he began to write again using only his head. The city of Jackson came to him and asked him to draw a set of engineering plans for him. And he did that writing in that manner. And he devised a contraption that he strapped himself into with ball bearings for wheels, and he rolled around the house. And finally, he beat polio and cured himself. For 18 years, Sam Lancaster was the city engineer here in Jackson. He was the superintendent of the light and gas company. He was an engineer with the highway department. And then he went west, and he became, at that time, the most famous highway engineer in America. And there are books written about Sam Lancaster. And he was the designer and the engineer of the Columbia River Scenic Highway, one of the most famous highways ever to be on this continent. Lancaster Park was named in his honor, but it's pretty well gone today. It was down on Royal Street where the old wells are there next to the train station. And I think generally people have forgotten about Sam Lancaster, but I can't forget about him because of his courage and his will to survive that dread disease and how he came back. And the other person that I always come back to, like him, only went to school at SWBU for 1 year. And his name was Monroe Dunaway Anderson, M.D. Anderson. His uncle was Hugh Anderson, who was a prominent banker who also was an alumnus of this institution. And his uncle came to him after his first year in school here and said, "I need you to come into the bank." And so he became an assistant cashier with the People's Savings Bank, where he stayed for 10 years before moving on to Houston in 1904 with the formation of the Anderson Clayton Cotton Company. And he made a fortune. He became one of the richest people in America. He never married. He didn't have many personal goods, lived in a hotel, and when he died, his body was brought back to Jackson and he's buried here at Riverside Cemetery. But when someone gets sick, when they are struck down with cancer, what name do you hear? M.D. Anderson. And that's his legacy through his gifts at Texas Medical Hospital and the M.D. Anderson Cancer Center. And he came from here, from Union University. The lights that you have that light up the past are bright, bright indeed. If the past is any indicator, then the future here is even brighter. A year ago, I had the privilege of co-chairing a search for a new president at Lambeth University. In the first meeting, I told that group, "This is going to be easy. All we've got to do is find somebody exactly like David Dockery, and then we can be through." I wish we could have done that. What a bright person he is, and what he has brought to this university. I look at your campus. I look at your faculty. And I look at the bright faces of the students who are here. I think it's important on this Founders Day to look at what you have been, what you are, and what you will be. I wish I could come back in 50 years or 100 years as a county historian and write about the things that you have done. God has blessed you richly in the past. May He do so in the future. Thank you.